you. As long as stars are above you. And longer if I can. How long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand. How long will I want you? As long as you want me to. And longer by far. How long will I hold you? As long as your father told you. As long as you can.
Good Friday morning, folks. If you're hearing that beautiful song by Al Golding, our theme song, you're listening to Of No Fixed Address right here at CKUW, 95.9, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg. Hope you're staying warm today. The temperatures have kind of warmed up a little bit. It's minus 20, but if you've got to live out there 24/7, it's not a good day. Today we have a person that I've wanted on my show for a very long time, and we finally ran into each other at the NHLSS Winnipeg conference last week, and we had some communication. Rebecca, how are you?
Good. How are you, Al?
I'm great. Yeah, nice to have you on. It's Rebecca Blakey, a very, very famous last name. And I was just going over your bio and your history, and if you could just, like I ask every single guest we have on the show, to maybe talk about a bit of your history and what drove you to get into the business that you're in, and I know you have a big heart for it, and just explain to the listeners or tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I grew up here in Winnipeg in Transcona, and I went to the University of Winnipeg, and then did a little bit of studies in Quebec as well, Montreal to be specific. I started working in Winnipeg's North End way back, I guess, probably in about 2009. I worked for the Community Education Development Association on Selkirk Avenue, and was part of the team that brought the Pathways to Education program to Selkirk Avenue at that time. And so I'd say that was really, you know, one of my first real opportunities to learn and journey with folks living in Winnipeg's inner city, and specifically at that time in the North End.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you read my bio, then you know I sort of dabbled in politics here and there. I've gone back and forth from politics to community development. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for that, Al, is that I see the two connected for me. So what has driven me to do work in community is, you know, a passion for social and economic justice.
Yeah.
And it was that same passion that drove me to work in politics for a while, too. And luckily for me, I always managed to do a little bit of both, and very happy to find myself now back in community. I moved back to Winnipeg in 2017, after being away for about 5 years, and I got a job at Mount Carmel Clinic,
yes,
which is where we first met.
Yes.
This is probably just around the time you were, well, maybe you started this radio show about a year or so around then. And so I was working as the director of community services at Mount Carmel. And that was a wonderful opportunity just to get reconnected with the community, with the folks in community. And, you know, it's funny at that time. Well, funny, not funny. At that time, I thought, wow, things have gotten a lot worse. You know?
Wow, yes.
And I would have to say that that's true again.
It's true again.
It's true again. We really saw in the pandemic things just get worse for people.
Yes.
So now I find myself working as public health manager in Winnipeg's downtown with Winnipeg Regional Health Authority. And that's another really great opportunity to support you know, our frontline staff that are doing really important work, connecting with folks, building relationships, and trying to help them access the care that they need. And you know better than me.
Oh, man.
folks aren't accessing that care all the time, right? And so the more we can do to get those pathways flowing, the better. And that's what we're trying to do in public health.
Awesome. You know, I really appreciate that. And you know, being at 650, I mean, you're in the heart of it.
And yeah, right next to your Hope Alley.
Yes. And you know, we are really heavily working on actually purchasing that area.
Okay.
And, you know, just so we can expedite things a little bit quicker, because if you got to go to EPC every 6 months and they reject it and push it down the push the can down the road, it's not much fun. So we want to get people warm and you know, comfortable in Hope Alley. So that's one of our plans there. I just wanted you to talk a little bit about your time as president of the NDP party, which is really interesting for me. I know I heard about that before, but it just kind of just reflected or resonated with me today. How was that for you? And what was it frustrating? Was it a good opportunity? That's really interesting.
Well, you know, like I said, I think that there is a lot of crossover between politics and community work. And
yes.
So for me at that time, at that juncture in my life, it felt like the best way for me to try and contribute to the struggle. I was, you know, inspired through my work with Jack Layton, and so was working closely with him at the time. And unfortunately, he died.
Yes.
It was at that time of his death that I was encouraged to take on that role. And it was, you know, it was a very hard but also important time for the party, because they were official opposition at that time, and then leaderless. So, all of a sudden being president was kind of
that's a huge responsibility at that point in time, especially without a leader, right?
Yeah, so you know, it was a bit of a full time job, more than it usually is, I think, just because of the circumstances.
Yes,
but also a really exciting opportunity. I would say, how was it for me? It was a great experience. A lot of really good learning. And I think some learning that I'm able now to reapply as I've, you know, come back into nonpartisan life, you know, working for the WRHA. So that's sort of an important thing to be able to do, right? Like, we have our personal partisan selves, and then we have our public
personas.
Personas, and we need to kind of be able to put that aside so we can focus on the work, whatever work it is that we're doing at the time, right?
Exactly. You know, that's one of the things I wrestle with that all the time. Talk about, again, you being right in the heart of things at 650. Did you notice a difference between being at Northwest and where you were also you had a position at Northwest? Clientele or the people in the area, was there a difference in the people that came in and treatment of those folks and all that kind of stuff?
Both at Mount Carmel Clinic and at Norwest Co-op Community Health, you do see you know, a lot of folks who are struggling.
Yes,
they tend to be folks that are, say, potentially precariously housed.
Yeah,
You know, are living in housing that is not ideal.
Yeah,
but what we see that's different at 640 Main at the Access Center downtown is that we're seeing folks who are actually unhoused at this time. You know,
yes.
As you know, that just creates so many more health issues.
Oh, man, absolutely.
Right? Because mm-hmm. how are you supposed to get healthy when you don't have a safe roof over your head?
You can't.
And so we're seeing hundreds of people at the Access Center mm-hmm. every day, and mm-hmm. we're really trying to build pathways for those folks. Our primary care and our mental health teams work hand in hand mm-hmm. To try and provide services, get people the care that they need. Mm-hmm. We've been making changes also to the physical space of the building to ensure that there's room for smudging and mm-hmm. other, you know, forms of yes. more culturally appropriate right. care, just so folks feel welcome and safe when they come in. And I think the numbers that we're seeing come through the door mm-hmm. is a testament to that. We have our community hosts working mm-hmm. to ensure, you know, folks, and we've got folks coming in for primary care, for mm-hmm. mental health, mm-hmm. and we have folks coming in just to warm up and to use the washroom, mm-hmm. right? We have one of the washrooms that's open all the time.
Oh, wow. I did not know. That's where my doctor is, actually.
Oh, okay. So,
I have the best doctor in the city, in Catherine Cassell, who's just a wonderful person.
Yeah, well, there is such a great medical team that really care about, you know, our community members. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what happens is, you know, a lot of folks are in hospitals. Mm-hmm. They have, and they get discharged right back into mm-hmm. hospital.
Yeah.
And where do they land? Well, they land at Access Downtown
yes.
because we're right near the shelters,
yes.
right? And so that's our job, is figuring out, okay, well, you know, how come you were discharged? Where mm-hmm. do you need to go? What? How can we provide you care in the circumstances that you're in? And so one of the things we're doing is advocating for better discharges to transitional places.
You know what? I'm involved in a couple of projects involving hospital discharge because I'm heavily involved in healthcare these days. And one of the actually two projects are involving discharge from hospital.
Okay.
And also, you know, we're involved in, putting people in a place after homeless folks, after people experiencing homelessness after surgery and things mm-hmm. like that. And we're working with Salvation Army on a second floor area there to put people in there for several weeks. Lots of times people go back to shelter and their beds are gone and they go and their stuff is gone. And we were hoping to have a little remedy for that. Everything takes time.
It does. Although what we saw in the pandemic, you'll remember, mm-hmm. is that anything's mm-hmm. possible as well, because all of a sudden everything happened overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So we just need to be pushing for some of those solutions that we saw in crisis to become long-term solutions, right? Because those folks are struggling as much now as they were then.
Yeah, like 777 or 775 Sargent, you know, they found got that apartment block given for COVID. You know, recovery, mm-hmm. or, you know, for people who had COVID, and, you know, they would send them there for testing, and then they would wait, because there's always a waiting period to find out, not like it is now. You have to wait a week to find out whether you had COVID or not. So the irony of that is that folks were hoping that they had COVID so they could stay for the whole 2 weeks or something. It was, you know, just the state of our homelessness, right? It was, mm-hmm. It was really, really tragic. I struggle with a lot of stuff, you know, in regards to what our governments and our healthcare system are doing. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to address shared health executive next month. Lynette's going to give me about 3 hours, so I might be able to influence people in 3 hours just a little bit. But, you know, but I do this, and I'm happy to do it. You know, maybe we can just draw a little bit more knowledge about the folks on the street, because nothing happens without that. And cultural mm-hmm. change only starts at the top and it filters down. And we're hoping that we can, from the executive, we can go down to different department heads within the DRHA as well. And, mm-hmm. you know, just bring a little bit of knowledge of the folks who are out there. And how can we really care for people if we carry our judgments with us? And I see that over and over and over again, right, in the hospital system. And there's an automatic presumption of who a person is, you know, just because they're on the street. And but I also know that your 940-950 does a really, really good job. They have a really – I've seen up close and personal the way that the staff over there treats folks. And it's not like that everywhere. Let me tell you, I'm sometimes really, really shocked by the way folks are still being, you know, treated simply because they are homeless, and whether they're doing anything in emergency rooms or whether they're not, they get the same they get the same treatment. And how do we change that? You know,
how do we? Yeah. Well, and I think part of it, I know one of the things that we're doing in downtown Point Douglas, WRHA, is making sure that all of our staff have access to that learning, right? So that they're learning about colonialism, they're learning about harm reduction, they're learning about trauma-informed care, you know, all of these things. People need to be equipped with that knowledge
they
can do a better job, right? Because they have to understand who these folks are, and greet them with the compassion that they deserve. But that comes from knowledge. And so one of the things we're doing is trying to make sure that people have that knowledge so that they can do a better job in building relationship with community members. And, you know, in public health, we're seeing people come through the door, and we're also getting out there and finding folks. We're going into encampments. You know, we're going into shelter to do immunizations. So our team downtown is really on the ground doing that outreach, like trying to connect with people where they're at. So it's great.
Really, really important.
Into access, but even if you're not, we're going to go out and do our best to find you where you're at.
Yeah, really, really important. Like I spend a lot of time with the WFPS and the police in this very, you know, dealing with this very issue of engagement with folks in the camps, right? Again, you know, sure, you have a job to do, people, but let's do with just a little gentler and more empathetic way of doing. I mean, empathy is one of those things that you don't learn. It's kind of innate. And but, you know, having them just have the knowledge of who the people are and how a good word and a good body language can make such a difference in a person's life, and they'll never know. But it in my case, it was to the extreme. You know, the examples of treatment. You know, one day one caused me to jump off a bridge. The other one pushed my life forward to where it is today. You know, and I always say about folks on the street, they don't have to stay there, but when we address them, we have to bring the right attitude with us. And not exercise those personal biases, because you're not
understanding what your point there, that every interaction matters, right?
It really
you know,
does.
That may be the interaction that changes the course of somebody's life, either for better or for worse. And when you're
100%.
Out there doing that work, you want to make it sure that whatever you're doing is hopefully changing for the better.
And that's a challenge I give to everybody when I'm training. I say, you know, which do you want to be? You know, you know, like for me, it was Health Sciences Center who threw me out three times because not threw me out, but disrespected me three times because I was a homeless person. Whereas at St. Boniface Hospital, that doctor saw through my homeless facade and saw a real person in there who had potential, and she gave me hope that someday I'd be helping people that were in the same position that I was. And lo and behold, you know, 4 months later, 4 years later, I stood in front of 127 department heads at Deer Lodge Center and the entire hierarchy. You know, I always say when you see a person on the street who's perhaps crashing on the sidewalk or kind of maybe out of it, I always say, you know, superimpose my face over that person's face and know that that person does not have to stay there. Because we exercise the judgment so many times and that, it really affects a person's life, the way we interact with them. And,
No, it matters, right?
It matters 100%.
It matters, yeah.
Talk to me about, you know, your position at Northwest.
Oh, at
Norwest, yep.
Yeah, so I was the co-ED there for about a year and a half, and that's actually where I started working with the WRHA because I was in a joint position. So I was the co-ED part-time of the co-op and then half-time public health manager for Inkster. And, you know, that's a very exciting community health center because they have a garden, a food program, all kinds of great community programs going on. And then for me, it was also, you know, my introduction to managing primary care and then also getting involved with the WRHA in public health. And I was really, you know, it's interesting, you know, Al, when you work, and you'll know this, when you work in nonprofits, when you work in community health, often people like to diss the WRHA.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, wow. 100%. We know.
Right? And,
yes.
Yeah. And I have to say that I have been nothing but pleasantly surprised, and that a lot of the stereotypes that I had heard about the WRHA when I worked in community have really proven to be wrong. I, and I, you know, and that's how I landed there, because I'm working with really wonderful people who really care about community members and who are doing their best within a large system to make change and to impact people's lives in a good way. And so, you know, I feel really good about the work that the WRHA is doing in community. And so when I was, you know, given the opportunity to get back downtown, where my heart lies, you know, I headed back downtown, and I'm happy to be there working with really wonderful people that, as I say, are working their butts off, just trying to get people care, right? And to create access to that care where they want it, right? And that is through partnership, too. You know, we're partnering with Sunshine House. Mm-hmm. We're partnering with Aboriginal Health and Wellness. We're partnering with the Soil Mission and Main Street Project, all the, whoever we can, right? Yep. To say, hey, we've got this resource, you've got that resource. Let's team up and get out there and help people access it.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, on another positive note is I do a lot of work with the Center for Healthcare Innovation. Now they've made changes all you know, with shared health and all that kind of stuff. And I know there's been major changes going on there, but I've worked closely with them now for about 3 years. And there are so many good people with the heart just such huge hearts that are burdened for the folks, and you know, and they really want to do the right thing. And it's for me, that's really, really encouraging, and makes me really, really happy that you know, there are so many great people that it gets lost in the conversation about healthcare and WRHA, that there are some really, really good people there. You know.
Yeah, I'd say the vast majority, right? And what you hear more about is like there's some, you know, nothing's perfect and there are problems.
Oh, for sure.
Be better. But there are a lot of really good folks doing very good work on the ground. You and I both know, like, there's only so much we, any of us, can do unless we see public investment in more, you know, rent geared to income social housing units with support.
The biggest, one of the biggest problems. I was just going to ask, you know, maybe we'll end on this because you only have about 3 minutes left. But what do you see as the biggest issue facing people on Main Street these days?
Well, there's just nowhere for them to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that is our biggest issue in Winnipeg right now. We haven't seen the kind of significant investment in social housing that this city needs since the 1970s, you know, since before I was born. So I think that's part of the challenge. And now we have many people with complex medical and mental health needs who are living on our streets, who need our care, who need a warm bed with supports, right? And we need to make sure that there are a different variety of places. Some of them need to be low barrier. They need to acknowledge there are some people who are going to use drugs for the rest of their lives, and those
without
people
a doubt.
To live with dignity.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I'm really happy that your sister, you know, made Shalom a low barrier facility for some. And that takes that took a lot of courage. You know,
big change. She has that courage.
Yes, and she's not a shrinking violet whatsoever.
No,
without a doubt. But you know, Rebecca, I want to thank you for coming on the show and you know, and your role within the community and your leadership, because you have that leadership and you have the respect from so many people that you get things done, and I know how that works. And it does. It, even in your position, it takes courage to do things sometimes. That you know, I fought through so many barriers, and I know that you know, you probably have to do the same thing. But you know, we need to keep hammering at it. But I'm glad you're in that position down at 646-50, because a person with your dedication is really needed down there. And I thank you for that. As a person with lived experience, I truly thank you for doing the work that you do down there.
Well, thank you, Al. That means a lot coming from you, and I'm sure that we're going to continue working together for many years to come. Let's hope we see some positive change.
Let's hope. And, you know, we need our federal government to really do something different than what they're doing, too. And, you know, by feeding the middle class, it doesn't exactly work for what we need to have done. So we need to work really, really hard on that. So, but thanks, Rebecca. And we're going to have you on again. Now, your sister's been on a number of times. And so I think we need to have you on a few more times with updates and things coming down the pipe.
Sounds good. Hey, happy to help out.
Take care, Rebecca.
Take care, Al.
You bet. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was a good friend, Rebecca Blakey. Her dad was actually Bill Blakey, a long-time federal MP for the NDP party. And her brother took over that position when he retired. So she has a real big political past to draw on, and I think she's using that to her advantage. Because sometimes you need those, Debbie, sometimes you need those political allies to get things done. And, yeah, I kind of have that, some of that experience on the local scene where I can actually talk to people like the mayor and just plant seeds. You may not get to see anything immediately, but sometimes, right? But we'll have a music break right now, and we'll come back in a few minutes. So hang in there and stay warm. And folks, that was Ron Paley with a Christmas tune of sorts. What was it called again, Debbie?
The Waltz of the Flowers.
The Waltz of the Flowers.
Nice.
Yeah, we have to play our, give homage to our local artists here.
Oh, yeah.
For the second half, by the way, folks, it's minus 20. First of all, you're listening to No Fixed Address, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg. And it's not a balmy day. Whoa, it's gone up to minus 13?
No,
minus 20, sorry.
Minus 32 wind chill.
Minus 32 wind chill. Well, of course, that's what it feels like. I was on CBC this morning. I walked all the way up to CBC at 8 o'clock this morning. It was cold.
Oh, yeah.
Froze my nose. You know, folks, people have to live out there in this. And you would think that folks do, but they live out there in this. A lot of times there's not space in the shelters, or they're kicked out and can't get back in because mm-hmm. of behavior issues and addictions and all that kind of stuff. Let's be kind out there. Again, I haven't said it for a while, but when you go to Tim's, buy a cup of coffee, buy an extra cup of coffee, and I always say if you pay $5 for a coffee at Starbucks, you can afford to pay for two of them. Yeah. Let's keep people warm out there. For the second half of the show, we're going to end this year with our brilliant station manager, Rob. And Rob, happy to have you on. Thanks for agreeing to do this today.
Too kind, Al. I'm happy to join you. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, I know. I've been kind of talking about this for a while, and I did not make notes on for this segment, but we're going to wing it, and we're going to get do well in here. And I think it's important to, you know, talk about you know, for me, this is my second home. I've been here for 8 years, coming up in
amazing
in May, I guess. And yeah. who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
You know, and I've felt like, you know, this is home. And you know, between yourself and Debbie and Scott, you guys do that. You create this welcoming atmosphere, and it's just makes doing the job a lot easier. And because people might think it's easy being on radio, but you know, it all depends on guests. You have to do some preparation almost every mm-hmm. week when you're on. Mm-hmm. And if you've had a hard week, and I'm here at lunch on Friday doing the show, sometimes at some point it gets draining, and mm-hmm. You have to give your mind a break and stuff. But I do appreciate doing the show a lot, and you guys make it so easy to do it. And every once in a while I say, okay, this is my last year, but then again, no.
Well, I mean, we're so grateful to mm-hmm. have you as a volunteer, Al. And I mean, I think you highlight something that's really interesting about mm-hmm. CKUW. And mm-hmm. I mean, our listeners understand it, but at a certain point, it's easy to just hear these voices and think of the people as professionals mm-hmm. or, you know, because I think we deliver a high level of programming. But,
we do.
You know, apart from myself and Scott and just a couple other part-timers, everybody's here is doing this on mm-hmm. the side.
Yes.
They're doing this as a hobby. They're doing this for you as a passion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is an enormous amount of work to find guests mm-hmm. and topics. People don't generally just call out saying, you
I want to be on your show.
Unless they got something to sell.
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of guest that you normally...
No. And, you know, I'm fortunate, though, at this stage of the game, I have people that are always open to coming on, or mm-hmm. even some ask, well, do you have time for me? And so even right now, other than I had a couple people that were sick that I could have brought on. I have five or six guests lined up, and yeah. I had them from before. And in January, we're just going to have to attack that and get all those people on.
Well, and I think that's the other part of it, too. Not only are the hosts volunteers, a lot of the people that we have as guests are mm-hmm. not professional spokespeople.
That's right.
They're not the politicians. They're not the person that's supposed to be delivering yep. the message, right? And that is what's makes this such a lively place, and
yep.
and the stories we can tell, it makes them real. They're not being filtered by a bureaucracy.
No.
But those people are also doing this, you
yes.
know, on the side.
yep.
It's also their passion. So,
yep.
you know, when we can make those connections, when you can get a guest on that's, you know, got a lot to talk mm-hmm. about, boy, it's such a wonderful experience to listen to that and hear those stories. So
it is.
Yeah,
and,
we're
you know,
really
we've,
grateful for that.
Debbie just gave me a list of folks that we've had on. Thank you for doing this. I didn't get this list, but, you know, people like, okay, for number one, I've made really good friends, and it's helped me so much was the mayor, mm-hmm. Mayor Scott. He was on when running for candidate.
Yeah.
And between, you know, I spent 3 hours with city council, and then shortly after I had all the candidates on air.
Yeah.
And that time kind of cemented our relationship. You know, I'm one of those few people that can phone the mayor's office and say, I need to see the mayor and get that opportunity.
That's amazing.
And so I attribute it a lot to the show here, know, and that kind of thing. And we've had people like Shandy Strong, who's works for the Liberal Party in the Ledge, and a strong activist for LGBTQ rights, and all that. Bradley West, the manager of Equity and Diversity at the city, another memorable one. My good friend Raphael from Boxdale Construction, I found out because of the show that he had lived experience, and he works with nonprofits in their construction plans.
Yeah.
And that's his job with Boxdale. And I found out that he had lived experience. I had Leah Gazan, my favorite MP, and one of my good friends. She always comes on every year when she's here in summer. Just people like Rhonda, who Debbie really connected with, Rhonda Elias Penner, who's the executive director of Thrive. I could go on. Colleen Farrar, two filmmakers, two of Canada's best documentary filmmakers have both been on. And one of them is a Cannes Award winner for human rights.
Amazing.
Films, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a year, quite an achievement. And I think, you look at, programmers on CBC or other stations, they might only do a season of 20 shows, 30 shows. And here at CKUW, we have volunteers coming in doing 50 shows a year.
Yep.
And when they miss two, they feel bad about it. You know, and I have to tell them, no, you're doing great.
Yeah, every once in a while, I feel I miss too many. But every once in a while, also, a lot of times there's conflicts. Or I just need a time to recharge on a weekend, right?
This is the funny thing. That's the experience of doing the radio and making it is different from the experience of listening to it. Mm-hmm. And many times I've had listeners call us when it's been the second or even the third airing of a program.
Yeah.
And they'll say, hey, I heard something there. And maybe they missed it the first time.
Yes.
Or perhaps they listened to it, and then when they heard it again, it resonated with them. So, we repeat programs here at CKUW, but I think that's just part of ensuring that those stories and those voices reach a wider audience.
Yeah.
And I know that people appreciate that,
too. Yeah, it's sort of like watching a movie over and over again. At some point, almost every single time you watch that movie, you see something that you never noticed before.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
There's also just the dynamics of radio. Most of the people listening right now are doing something else. Mm-hmm. They're working, they're driving, they're washing dishes.
Yep.
And so it's really hard to have your complete attention on a program. And many of our programs like yours have longer form interviews.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just simple sound bites.
And
that's
what people appreciate about this show, is that we do not do sound bite radio.
That's right.
And even if people are tentative about coming on or apprehensive about it, I always say, it's like it's you and me just talking, except there's mics in between.
Yeah.
And you're going to feel better about it after you left the studio. You're going to feel really good about what happened here.
It's so funny because, people used to think that was a strange way of doing things, that community radio having these long-form interviews, you want to have a guest for more than 10 minutes, that's bizarre.
Mm.
Except nowadays, one of the most popular audio formats is the podcast, which is literally 99% of the time a long-form interview.
Yep.
It's either a bunch of people sitting around and making jokes and talking. Or it's a serious subject and an expert and a longer discussion, and that's become so popular. And it's something we've always done here.
Mm.
And I think where we excel is bringing those local stories
That's exactly it. 90% of my guests are local, but occasionally I'll bring in somebody from out of town too that has a really good story to tell.
Well, and with your subject matter, there's intersecting jurisdictions, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got federal government, provincial government, city government, and then you've got developments in other provinces that kind of echo, across the country too.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk about those things.
Yeah.
And I think it's great.
It is. For example, I was on Marcia Macusa this morning on CBC.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was a long segment at 9 minutes or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That was a
long
segment.
That's long for them.
That's a long
right.
segment,
yeah.
right? But it got, we deal with issues like we didn't get to talk about today, but community connections space at the library is going to be shut down because in its usual way of doing things, the city deemed it not essential. But that space saves lives. And it belongs there because, you know, the library is a really good gathering place for folks experiencing homelessness, right? Mm-hmm. When I was homeless, I used it to get out of the elements and just look on a computer and all kind of stuff. And it's a perfect place. A lot of people are saying it doesn't belong in the library, but yes, it does. And you know, the city tends to somehow they separate or they don't understand why it's important to keep things like the community grant program going,
mm-hmm.
where they decide to
That's
cut
right.
$2 million out of $5 million there. Community connections, the poverty reduction strategy, all the things that affect the vulnerable in our society, they're kind of just chopping away.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's difficult. I deal with the city a lot. Like, where are you getting this advice?
you know?
And so, but these are questions and issues that we can address on the show.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
And
and bring them to a wider audience, and maybe people who are like, well, you know, who might feel like, well, why does the library have that kind of a space?
Yeah.
That's when I mean, maybe they don't go to the library, but they've got a vision of what a library is.
Yeah.
And having someone explain it to them, you can build that empathy and create that understanding and awareness.
I still think I do some training, quite a bit of training with the city, but it's really neat to reach these folks a little bit more because boy, oh boy, oh boy. But one of the reasons why I want to have you on the show, it's a good way to end the year anyway. And also, what are your thoughts on programming last year and where we're going? I know there's been some new ones coming on board and stuff.
Yeah, actually this has been, programming-wise, a very exciting year here at CKUW. We've had quite a few new shows start, and we've seen a real swell in interest from students and community members. So that's really exciting, you know. Almost every day of the week, we've added a new show with live hosts. Yeah.
Whoa.
Tuesday, in fact, there's two new ones on Tuesday. Monday, there's...
Wow, that's crazy.
There's two new ones. So, yeah.
But there are a lot of hours in a day.
A lot of hours in a day, yeah. You know, when... We've often relied on programming from other stations, and we still do that. So people might think the schedule is full.
Like Democracy Now, et cetera. Is that still on?
Yeah, Democracy Now. Yep. Yeah. And a lot of people tune in for that. That's a really important important program. But we do have other shows, you know, where we repeat them. And I guess what I'm getting at is there's always time for more volunteers.
Yeah, yeah.
So if anyone out there is listening and has been thinking about making radio, it's really not as difficult as it might seem.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two people here nodding their heads who've been doing it for a little while. And, you know, we do the training. We try to create a welcoming environment, exactly like you said, Al, and set you up. What you need to bring is a passion for music, a passion for a particular topic, a little bit of spare time, you know, and make your radio show happen.
Yeah, and one of the good things that happened on this show was you and I and Debbie getting together at Elements and saying, how would you like to have somebody do the board, operate the board for you and produce for you? And, you know, and that just frees me up so much just to do this. Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, and that's, I mean, as staff, as one of the only staff, that's what we do. We look at volunteers, we listen to the programs, and we think like, okay, well, maybe this person could use some help. Maybe they're on at the wrong time. They're, they're always 5 minutes late. Maybe we could put them at an earlier time of day, right? So, I you know, people sometimes look at the staff and talk as if we own or run the station, and that's not really true. Our job is to facilitate the creation of shows, so to help people, to aid them, you know, and
guide the process,
fill that schedule up with as much live and local shows as we can.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
happy to put you together, you two together,
and we are a good combination here. We get along extremely. We connect on a really good level.
Yeah, and it just really helps because a spoken word show is a lot more demanding than just playing music.
It is.
Lining up guests and stuff, and we see that through all of our programs. That's been the slowest area to recover. We used to have quite a few local spoken word shows, quite a few more than what we have right now. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that we're always looking for, you know? We used to have a great show called Inner City Voices that... came out of the Spence Neighborhood Association many years ago.
Yep.
And we had a great feminist radio program.
Awesome, yeah, yeah.
LGBTQ program. So, you know, there are lots of holes there still to fill in the calendar if people are listening and wondering about getting involved.
And you know, this show is kind of a one-of-a-kind thing, and it's one of the reasons why I can't quit. because somebody has to be that advocacy, have that voice of advocacy. And, you know, it's really important that, you know, we don't always do it right, but we do it, you know. And I think every little bit helps, you know.
Yeah, at least I don't know if there's
just keep that awareness going, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way of doing it, right? It's a conversation, it's a process, it's discussing ideas, it's sharing. And so, you know, I mean, I think I'm excited to hear that you want to keep going and you've still got this passion, even though, you know, you're neck deep in all of these other projects and advocacy. Yeah. It's wonderful to still have the show going, and I hope we continue for a long
time. Yeah, so I'm going to try to make 10 years. Like, I thought maybe if I ever make 1 year, I'll be good. But now we're going to hit 8 in May, I think it is.
That's fantastic.
It's like crazy, you know, crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when I saw, you know, Michael Welch had his 10-year pin there a while ago.
We'll save one for you. Don't worry.
It was a few years ago. And I'll never make it that far. Yeah. But, just speaking about the future, how does that look for
Yeah, I mean, we kind of have a bit of a budget crunch. There's a real crisis in Canadian universities, actually.
Yeah, there is.
That's sort of bubbling under the surface. You know, everybody in government and lots of places in this country has become addicted to gambling and decided to gamble on foreign students paying for everything.
And then all of a sudden that...
We had a huge influx in...
That tap has turned off.
So, well, sure, but what's happened there is, so the government relaxed immigration, brought in tons of students. So the provinces were like, oh, this is great. We don't have to fund universities quite as much anymore. And then all of a sudden the government's like, who did this? How did this problem happen? And overcorrects perhaps. And so now, enrollment here at U of W may be down as much as 20%. And that's a 20% off our budget, right? So that's a huge impact, and that's going to be a real challenge going forward. It's nothing that we did. It's literally the government and the universities gambling on this resource.
And again, it comes down to the immigration issue, and it's how does the government decide to international students. That's probably the worst place that they could ever attack the issue.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot of expertise in that. I know at one point, they were taking advice from businesses because they know that the international students are cheap labor, right? And so there's all kinds of intertwined issues in there, and I acknowledge that it's not easy, but the decisions that have been made are going to be painful. And so, we'll have to adapt to that.
Yep.
I think it's great. We're a nonprofit. We're a resilient nonprofit. We can make some changes, but we're going to lean heavy on everyone come February for our fundraising drive. So I hope everyone out there listening
I was just going to say, Rob, if you want to tell people where to send money.
And even you can go to our website. There's a donation link. Mm-hmm. Be eligible still for a tax receipt for this year if you donate before January 1st. Mm-hmm. Or save it till February. That's fine either way. But, we are listener-driven. A quarter of our support comes from individuals who are tuned in, and we need it. That's what keeps us going.
Thanks for coming on today, Rob. It's always a great way. I think this might be our last show of the year, but we're going to be lined up like 6 deep next year with guests. And one of the ones I'm really looking forward to is Raising the Roof. And they are now in Winnipeg with a housing unit that they've just opened up. I was invited to their opening celebration. And they're actually filling the gap in families, right? Yeah, international families. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really, really good thing. And we're going to have their communications person on just to start the new year. But thanks for coming on, Rob. And it's always... Great fun being on. Thank you, Deb, for another great year and helping me out.
Great
all
work,
and,
yeah, as all. Good work, team.
Yeah. Thanks, folks. Come back next year. Have a great holiday season, and stay safe. Thanks.